When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Sewing Out Loud, the official podcast of ZD Sewing Studio. Here are your hosts, ZD and Mallory.
Sewing Out Loud.
All right, hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Mallory Donahue.
And I'm ZD Donahue.
And this is Sewing Out Loud. We haven't done this in a while, right, Mom? Right. I know I've said that before.
I mean, not everyone knows this or realizes this, but we just closed our
retail store.
Brick and mortar store, and it almost killed us.
No, we almost...
We are so tired.
We almost died. Not exaggerating.
Exhausting, exhausting, exhausting.
You know, Mom, you don't talk about this a lot, but Mom struggles with a chronic illness.
Right. I have an autoimmune disease, which, like, every morning I get up and slay the dragon before I start my day. So,
Mom deals with, like, a lot of pain and exhaustion and stuff, and...
But I don't tell you that because I don't want you to view me as being ill.
Yeah. So, yeah. But she does deal with this. And so the stress, physical and mental, of closing down that store has been immense. And then.
But I'd be strong.
I announced this in the newsletter. But I don't know if everybody gets the newsletter. If you want to get the newsletter, go to sewhere.com/lovenote and you can sign up. But I'm pregnant.
Which is also an autoimmune disease, right. Basically. They're very similar.
I got this thing.
They make you tired. Yeah. Your immunity is down.
Yeah, so I've gotten sick.
So
and then
we were sick and pregnant doing this.
Now, I think I mentioned this, I had a miracle man show up. He wanted to buy all our weird fixtures, which was just...
John, Mallory's
hey,
boyfriend.
John. Yeah, he's my new man. He's amazing. And... He wanted to buy all these fixtures. We had this huge display.
Which meant we didn't have to move them.
No, we had this huge display at the shop for Floriani thread, okay? So if any of you have ever shopped for embroidery thread, there's like 300 colors. And it's on this spinning rack that only
weighs 5,000 pounds.
Yeah, it only fits Floriani thread, right? So we were just, Becca and I were like looking at it. We were sitting there like glaring at it and being like, man, what are we going to do with this? And this man comes in. He wants to buy some shelves. He wants to buy some other stuff. And I'm like, cool, cool, cool. And he's, you know, telling me what he wants. And we're talking about when we can get it to him. And then he like looks over. He's like, how much do you want for that white thing over there? And it was a struggle to keep a straight face. I had to be like,
I don't think John listens to our podcast.
Yeah. I was like, well, sir, we would like, you know what I
mean? Well, sir, can I pay you to take it away?
No, we're like, oh, we're going to have to, like, take this to the dump, you
know? I kept saying, you know, we could, like, strip it down, and this would be a good base for somebody's, like, dress form. But,
yeah.
You know. It
was just... and he even said, he's like, I'm going to cut these top wire things off here. I was like, whatever you want, man, you know? So anyway.
Sucker was heavy.
He, some things like that happened. But then John, my man again, told me he was going to come to the store at 8 a.m. to get some stuff on our last day we were there. But then
and Mallory and I were running on like two cylinders out of eight.
We'd just been at the shop.
No,
at
we had
8
been
PM
there till
the 8 before.
The night before selling our sink base unit.
We should make a list of all the weird crap we had at the store that had nothing to do with sewing.
Yeah.
Like refrigerator.
Well,
and the
I think the other
the
thing is
base.
That store was like 2,300 square feet.
Yeah.
And if you're moving a house that's 2,300 square feet, you know, okay. But sewing, first of all, has all this little stuff.
So many rooms.
The other thing is we were packed vertically.
Yes.
Which in your house, you're not packed vertically. And we had no big beds that were taking up any space.
No.
Right, right.
No, it was all this little stuff. So Anyway, basically, well, he texts me at 7:10. I just gotten Zelda out of bed. I'm going to be there at 7:30, and it is pitch black and raining. Like
pouring. It was like a toad choker raining.
I told Mom that I'm sorry, her pond is filling up, but it needs to stop raining. And anyway,
thrill of the fill, thrill of the fill. The pond is filling up.
So anyway, I got there at 7:30. I had to help him move these huge desks, and then I had to lay on the floor for a little bit. And then Mom brought me
breakfast. I brought her
breakfast
from McDonald's. Shea McDonald.
Okay, so I know this is a little bit of a longer intro, but let's talk about what we did today. Let's talk about this week. Like, we didn't have to go in the store and open it. Okay. Took care of some things, been answering some emails, been trying to get together some things that people have ordered. And then today, Becca and Sam came over.
Right.
We unpacked boxes.
We're starting to unpack, right.
We're sitting in our new podcasting setup.
Yep.
And, you know, we didn't have to stop.
And we don't have to take it down, and we don't have to move it.
Nope.
We don't have to worry about who left what microphone where.
Nope.
Or did the computer get left at the shop and the microphones are at
the computer charger.
The house and blah, blah, blah.
Nope.
And we're going to be efficient and wonderful.
And I'm not wearing a bra.
Oh, really?
Yep. Whole day.
Well, I'm wearing pants just so everybody knows.
I
have on a sports bra.
I took a bath.
It has underwires, but it is a sports bra.
I took a bath. I put on deodorant. I put on all clean clothes. And I cleaned my toilets before Sam came over.
I took a bath and I put on sunscreen in it. I realized I'm probably not even going outside and it's cloudy.
I'm glad you're well protected.
Yes, well, I need to be. But
Anyway, yeah, this day has been much different, and now we worked.
And we're happy and we're laughing, and there is a certain freedom now that once we physically have recovered.
It was a little rough.
I would hit the bed, and like I felt like my bed was like my body was velcroed to the sheets, and I could hardly move.
Well,
I was so tired.
I've been having some problems sleeping.
I didn't last night.
Last night was my first good night too.
That's insomnia.
Insomnia. Don't spoil our next podcast about sewing puns. Okay. Okay. So today, are anything else to add about the move and whatnot?
No, it's been nice. I think is we work so much in both places, you know, or sometimes I would be at home doing stuff and you would be at the shop. And I really like that it's all in one place. And the sign is down. The sign man called. The sign is off of the commercial building. And we're bringing it home.
Yeah.
We didn't know if we could do that. And he's been like, he's been so nice. He hasn't embarrassed me by asking what it would be like to bring it home or anything.
Mom's a little preoccupied with the sign, rightly so.
It was very expensive.
Very expensive. No, I'm not blaming you, but things have turned out very well with the sign. So we still have our huge bright red ZD Sewing Studio sign.
That's right. We would probably put it up like in the living room. I don't know. I think like on the side of the RV shelter or the pump house.
Okay, would it fit all the way across this?
Oh, it might.
I just had a revelation.
The other thing too is though I've thought about that it would be a really hard to clean. It's like in those script letters.
Yeah.
That it would be, you know.
Well, I wonder how
dirty it
is.
Of course, it's also very good for birds to nest in.
How dirty is it right now from being outside for six
years?
Well,
now it's in the rain. It's probably cleaner off the building and in the rain than it has been.
Okay. Well, let's get to our actual topic at hand.
Oh my gosh, we're talking about sewing now.
Yes, that's right.
Instead of bringing sewing to you.
But we're experts at moving stuff. No, we do.
Apparently we are.
We build things. We move things. I mean.
Okay, I have to tell you, no one could have done this like Mallory and I did. And Sam was like a tremendous amount of help.
Yeah.
Becca was it, but. Honestly, when you and I were alone, we did some stuff.
No, we did.
And Hillary came in with her family the last day, and we were cleaning, and the bat showed up.
Oh, the bat.
There was a bat.
No, the people who helped us were so helpful, because the last day, I don't know how impressive I was, except that I got there at 7:30
and moved
those
desks. Well, yeah, you did run out of gas a little bit.
I was glazed over.
Hey, you and I were back there again at 7 o'clock at night doing the last sweep through.
My sister and my brother-in-law let me, like, sit on the ground and, like, tell them what to do for a couple minutes. They were like, hey, where? I was like, put that there. And they just did it, and they were so nice to me. I was so tired.
But Mallory and I were shaking some booty, let me tell you.
Oh, you know what I got to do today? I got to go downstairs and eat lunch.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That this I real
made.
Food.
That
yeah.
I made.
We can eat, like, healthy food.
Healthy food, not right. fast food, not wasting the money on right. that. I ate lunch.
You are guys, not forgetting your lunch because it's here.
You guys didn't need to eat lunch when I did because we weren't here very long. Right. But, like, I had to eat something because I'm,
well, I kind of ate a late breakfast, too.
Yeah. So, anyway, I got to take a break, eat some lunch, check on some things, and it's. I think I'm going to be so much healthier.
Right.
And happier. And
I get to watch. I'm having the thrill of the fill because I'm watching my pond fill up.
Okay. It's been like 10 minutes. We gotta get going.
Sorry to all of you people who really want us to get to the meat of the subject of sewing.
And what
sewing.
Could be more exciting than buttonholes? Really?
Well, maybe a lot of things. Like the fill of the thrill of the pond. But no. Buttonholes are important.
Yeah.
Okay? They're important. And there are techniques to buttonholes.
And people get afraid of buttonholes.
Mm-hmm.
People are intimidated by buttonholes.
And they should be because there are some really good mistakes made on buttonholes that make them look not professional or not nice.
I didn't really discuss this with you before the podcast, but I think today we're going to focus on buttonholes sewn with thread, not so much bound buttonholes.
No, we won't talk about bound or anything. So we're talking about something that the machine does.
We're talking about machine sewn buttonholes. Right. Okay, so that's what we're focusing on today. Just see, there are bound buttonholes. Actually, I did my first bound buttonhole too long ago.
Oh, that's right, on your jeans.
No, I didn't. No. I don't.
Oh, that was a hand.
That was a hand sewn buttonhole.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't remember why I was doing this. God knows. Okay, anyway, so remember what I did. Oh, I did it on my anorak.
Oh, okay.
I have bound buttonholes
because
on my...
Because it was a thick...
Instead of eyelets, I did these little bound buttonholes, which I... Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway. Machine sewn buttonholes. Do you want to talk about, briefly, the difference between doing a buttonhole on a woven versus a knit? What the buttonhole stitch can look like? When you're selecting it on your machine, she's looking at me wide-eyed. Okay, when you're going to do a buttonhole on your machine, you probably have a special foot of some kind, right, Mom? Okay. And then you choose a special stitch, too.
Well, I was going to say, see, my machines have like 5 buttonholes, right?
Right. Or on some of those baby locks, it's like
11.
12 buttons. Yeah. Yeah, like
11 and an eyelid and a
right.
this. Yeah.
So the most, I would say, I'm going to say old-fashioned of buttonhole feet that I can think of is like the buttonhole foot that just has 2 grooves on the bottom of it.
Uh-huh.
And it just looks like a normal presser foot.
And you're doing it yourself. It's not stopping or starting with any help from the machine.
You're measuring.
Whether it be mechanical or computerized.
Yep.
Right.
So you're measuring.
And I made them like that for years.
You know, I just did it. When I was filming for Baby Lock.
It's not that difficult.
Yeah, I was very intimidated. And then I did it and I was like, oh, no thing, you know.
Right.
You need to follow directions.
Right.
You need to do some tests.
You need to take your time.
And so with those, if you just have a buttonhole foot that is literally like a normal presser foot with 2 grooves on the bottom, you probably have a 4-step buttonhole on your machine, maybe only 1. Like buttonhole,
right.
Like where you have to go.
But you have to click to each step.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So what you have is, you know, you have what I would call the left side of the buttonhole and then the stop of the buttonhole that would stop sort of, you know.
The bar tack.
And then you're going to go back. You're going to sew backwards along, you know, the length of that other, you know.
Leg
that you did. And then you have to stop and bar tack again.
Yeah. So with a 4-step buttonhole, things to remember are make sure your needle's out of the fabric, moving between steps.
That's true.
Because it will shift.
It shifts right away.
And so you don't want to be breaking your needle.
That's right.
And to measure accurately, you need to make marks on your fabric.
Right. And I want to talk a bit about measuring for buttonholes. Because if you have a nice flat button, you know, you can basically put a little mark on each side of your button, right? And you're pretty much going to get the right size. Now, make that button on a scrap. The scrap needs to be the same as, you know, fabric that you're going to make your finished buttonhole on.
Yeah.
And you want to slip that button through. If it doesn't go through easily, if you have to force it, you're going to wind up with misshapen buttonholes at some point, or broken threads, or worn
ripped
threads,
thing,
or
yeah,
whatever. Right.
Yeah.
So that's a nice flat button. So if you have a button that is, say, dome shaped,
yeah,
or it's decorative in some way, or it's sometimes you'll have buttons that look like they're piled upon each other, mm-hmm, sort of thing, like levels of buttons, you'll need a bigger hole.
Right. Right.
Okay. Now, so too small a buttonhole can be a problem, and too large a button. If it's too large, you're going to come unbuttoned.
Yeah, your gap. You'll be gapping and coming unbuttoned.
So, you know, size matters. Ha, ha, ha.
It's got to be the right size.
It's got to be the right size. And you will make test buttonholes on exactly the same fabric that you are going to put your final buttonhole on. You will use the same stabilizers. You will use the same interfacings if they're there. It has to be the same, or it might not come out as nice as you would like.
Yeah, so those rules that Mom just said about the testing
go
and the
for all buttonholes.
Yeah, all buttonholes. So now I called that foot old-fashioned, didn't I?
You did. You know? And sometimes that buttonhole foot can be real important.
Because I'm going to discuss the other two types of buttonhole, mm-hmm, feet that I'm thinking about. But what that foot also does, before I move on,
uh-huh,
it gives you an infinite
range. That's right. So
range.
I can make a buttonhole that's 12 inches long.
That's right.
And somebody goes, well, I don't want one of those, but I will tell you exactly when I used that buttonhole foot.
Tell us when.
It's
I don't believe you.
When you were Fruma Sarah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you wore a flying harness.
Mm-hmm.
So in the back of your costumes, I had buttonholes that were 8 inches long that the harness could be, straps could come through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I could have faced it and done all this stuff, but doing a button, especially when you only flew for like 2 minutes.
Right.
Right? 2 minutes, 3 nights or something. Like,
uh-huh,
how much, costumes are another story, how much time you want to put in or not, So I just needed those finished holes.
Yep.
And so that's when I made those 6 and 8 inch long buttonholes.
So there you go. So there's kind of it's the buttonhole foot that sort of first originated. Then
right,
we get into buttonhole feet that they can look very complex. If you have maybe a really old machine, it'll be like buttonhole attachment.
Yeah, man, it looks like my friend Eric said, looks like a can opener.
Yeah.
Like, because everything looked like a can opener on those old treadle machines.
Right.
They had great attachments,
mm-hmm,
but they always looked like part of a can opener,
right,
or a whole can opener.
Some kind of
right. Like, but they worked.
Yes, they were excellent tools.
Right.
So we get into buttonhole feet that look like rectangles.
Yes.
They
look like an exaggerated long foot.
With a big opening.
The same ankle, but this, uh-huh, long foot with an opening in it, and it slides back and forth.
Yeah, so the little presser foot has this like frame that it kind of sits on that gets to move along.
Right.
And this is important. So it moves your fabric and it's keeping it in place so it can go back and forth,
right,
to make this rectangular buttonhole. Sometimes these feet can have a really wonderful feature on them where you slide out the back of the foot.
And it holds the button.
It holds the button and it measures the buttonhole for
you. And 95% of the time, that will be your correct buttonhole size. But what I'm telling you is test it. Because if it's a thick button,
yep,
or thick fabric sometimes requires,
yeah,
a larger buttonhole.
Exactly. So
right,
once again, always test.
So what you may have to do is put that button in there and find out that maybe you have to stick like a little toothpick in there or something, and which I use as a shim when I'm sewing.
Right.
Toothpicks are shims in sewing. So I might have to shim out that button just a little bit. Or sometimes I've done things like, this looks like it's about the size of a quarter or a quarter. So I put quarters and dimes and pennies in those slots.
And I've made buttonholes with those kind of what I would call like an automatic buttonhole
right,
foot that weren't for buttons. Before, they were for something
right,
else,
right,
you know,
right,
or I was just putting it, I can't think of like an exact.
No, we've done it in tops of curtains.
Yeah.
Shower curtains.
Absolutely.
Shower
and
curtains,
so I've always tested a little bit,
right,
sliding that out. Now, when you have that slider that's measuring that button, there's something else on your machine called a buttonhole lever.
Right.
It needs to come down and go in between the two, what'd you call those? The two plastic, I like called them nubbins, and you called them something else, and it was good. Or somebody.
Oh, yeah, what do I call them?
Somebody had a different
word.
They
have a name. No, they have a name that I think it's almost an official name
like,
that I
yeah,
call them.
Yeah, and I didn't know it. Anyway.
They're like stops, you know.
Bumpers.
Bumpers. No. Yeah, maybe. Bumpers? I don't know. Oh, my goodness. What do I call them? She's totally messed me up.
Well, they
okay,
do.
Okay, remember, the brain cells are just recovering
That's
from
right.
the move.
You do have that buttonhole right. lever going between those bumpers.
And they're bumpers.
And I'm...
Because it... So the lever comes down, and it's up by the needle bar, mm-hmm. and you just pull it down, and what it will do is it will hit the bumper on one hand, and then it will hit the bumper. So what it actually does is it changes the function of the machine. When it hits that bumper, it goes, ooh, I'm going to stop and do a bar tack.
Yeah.
Ooh, my bar tack's finished. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to hit it again. Bump, and now I'm going to do another bar tack to finish.
So we're very in a sort of cursory manner, explaining how, in general, how buttonholes can work.
Oh, man, you're using cursory. I thought you were tired.
Look in your owner's manual for how to do a buttonhole on your machine, obviously.
And my shout out to Lonnie is, Lonnie, people really do read those.
Yeah,
it's
Lonnie.
Called an owner's manual.
Put it in your bathroom.
I bet, where is, I bet the owner's manual to your car has never left the glove box. Am I correct? Lonnie.
Yeah. People are going to be like, why are you being so mean to that Lonnie?
Because Lonnie's
girl.
Mean too.
Lonnie's an evil
Lonnie
genius.
Can take it.
Yep.
Lonnie okay. can take it.
So that's you know, how your buttonhole foot's going to work. You do need to use some foot that allows you to do a buttonhole. Now, I want to talk about buttonhole stitches real quick before we take a break.
Oh, okay. Because okay? we were talking about woven versus knit versus what.
So sometimes if you just got one buttonhole, that's what you got. That's
right.
it. Now, you can change your stitch length. Okay, mm-hmm. probably just a little bit. There's a little bit
right.
of leeway
which,
there.
Which spreads the stitches apart because all of these stitches are like a stitch that's going to build up like a satin stitch, sort of.
Now, on your woven fabrics, that's fine. Sometimes on knits, though, some of our machines that have like 11 buttonholes on
right.
them, they'll have special buttonholes yep. that are for knits.
And it will tell you which ones with the picture in your owner's manual.
Well, and if you have a nice enough machine, it tells you on the screen.
It might tell you right on the screen. Well, especially if you've got a digital screen.
Yeah, that's what
yes,
I mean. Yeah.
Right.
So like the buttonhole, you know, if you picture a buttonhole that's on your, you know, like men's shirts, you get that satin stitch that's all those stitches very close together, you
right.
know. But sometimes it'll be like a longer zigzag.
Right. You'll see a more open
or
zigzag.
It'll be like a, you know, a honeycomb stitch
well,
on the
yeah,
side,
or,
like diamonds.
Right.
You know.
Or sometimes you see a little like that baseball-y looking stitch, you know.
Now,
I
will say, if you're putting a buttonhole in knits, you don't want your buttonhole to stretch.
No.
You know,
you
no
never
matter,
want a buttonhole to
no,
stretch.
You,
ever, 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 you don't want a buttonhole to stretch.
No.
You will be sorry.
So you're going to probably take away the stretch from that fabric.
That's right.
With interfacing or something. Or, you know, we like to use cotton organdy
right.
in our button bands.
I don't make a buttonhole unless I interface it. And on your Fruma Sarah costume,
uh-huh.
what I did was, because some of it was knit and some of it was chiffon, I believe. It was a couple different kinds of
yeah,
fabric.
Yeah, it was lots of different.
It was several different kinds
You're
of fabric.
You're right, for if texture. You believe that.
It
yeah.
was texture, let me tell you. And what I did is I laid the cotton organdy on the back of it when I made it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted some support, and I was only going through one layer of fabric.
Yeah. Now, right. those buttonholes that are made for knits, though, sometimes on a knit, you don't want a bunch of buildup. And you don't
right.
need as many stitches because the knits won't fray.
Nothing's going
right?
to fray, but you want it to somehow stabilize yeah. and maintain the shape of that buttonhole.
Now, okay, so I think that pretty much covered the knits versus wovens sort of buttonhole stitch thing. Not everybody will have that.
Yeah.
But I think let's take a break and come back and talk about stabilizers and interfacing.
Okay.
Okay. Mom, I've done it.
Uh-oh.
I have found the perfect laundry spray bottles, sourced them, found the perfect labeling stickers, and brought them to the public.
And what do you put in them?
We put vodka in one of them and your special Distain stain removal solution in the other. And they are aluminum 16-ounce bottles, not too heavy.
I was going to say, perfect weight, perfect size.
Not too heavy when you fill them. Perfectly portable for taking around your house, leaving in your laundry room, or out to your car to deodorize it after your baby's puked in it.
So, do you give my Distain recipe to the world
I
free?
I do. We give it away for free. And if you go to sewhere.com/clothingcare, you will see these spray bottles, and you can use a special discount code, VODKA, to get 20% off the laundry spray bottles from ZD Sewing Studio.
Good deal. So happy.
Sewing out loud.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, we're back after leaving a sweet little
Mallory,
message for Sam.
Tell me, what buttonhole do you stabilize?
All buttonholes.
Ding, 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 ding.
Gosh, I felt like that one math test where it was like true or false, all prime numbers are odd. I almost got it wrong.
Yeah.
So this, I think I want to real quick talk about interfacing versus stabilizer.
Right.
And how we use those terms. I think this maybe comes from a little bit of a machine embroidery background, or is that not right?
Well, you know,
all my sewing life, I have machine embroidered.
You've always machine embroidered.
No,
you know,
they existed before that, right?
Well, we've always had to stabilize things.
Sure.
Whether we were stabilizing it with a product that someone manufactured specifically for stabilizing that was usually a paper-based, non-woven type stabilizer, or whether we were stabilizing with another piece of fabric. This has been done in all of the history of well-done sewing.
So we're going to break it down for you.
Right.
So you're putting a buttonhole in the button band of a button-up shirt. Did I say button?
Button placket.
Enough. Button placket.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So if you're putting it in this button placket, you will be asked in your pattern instructions, most likely, to interface that placket
and
in some way.
It might say iron-in interface. Mallory and I don't do iron and interfacing, okay?
What would we do, Mom?
We would probably use cotton organdy or silk organdy, depending on the blouse.
So what we do, when we say we use cotton organdy, we'd put our cotton organdy on our cutting table, put our fashion fabric on top of it, and cut out our pattern pieces together and treat them as one.
That's right.
And go to town.
That's
and
right.
And we would consider our placket interfaced from the presence of the cotton organdy.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
Now, we might be using a wool or a flannel, and if we didn't have any cotton organdy at hand, we might use another type of cotton, like a quilting cotton.
Yeah.
A really fine, tight, woven cotton that's going to stabilize that other fabric and give it some support.
Oh, so this is, you know, if you have ever heard of like sew-in interfacing,
right.
We're basically sewing in our thing. Now, interfacing as a term, something that stays behind forever.
Never meant to be taken off.
It's not supposed to be taken off.
It's incorporated to be part of the garment and make that part of the garment usually more substantial, maybe stiffer. I don't know if that's the right. Or more shape. Just shaping. Yes.
Like on the collar. Yes. You would be asked to interface the collar,
you know,
too.
My blouse doesn't need interfacing all over it, but I want my collar to stand
up. Maybe your cuffs too. Right. Your collar, your cuffs, and your placket.
Right.
Okay.
So it's someplace where you're wanting more shape than the fashion fabric you're using lends to.
Now, if I were to make it also like a knit button-up shirt, like sometimes yes. you want to make you use a fabric with like a little bit of stretch so right. it's more comfortable, or right. you make it out of ponte or something like that, I would once again use the cotton organdy in that placket.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? That placket should not be stretching.
Mm-mm.
It's going to be a stable part.
And I've owned shirts where the placket is not interfaced.
That's right.
Making gap, you mm-hmm. know, but that part you don't want it to stretch.
Right.
So now you've made your beautiful shirt and you're ready to stitch your buttonholes. Before mm-hmm. we talk about stabilizer, let's talk about where to put our buttonholes.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you know, I got this pattern, and in this commercial pattern, it had a buttonhole like template that I was supposed to cut out and lay on my shirt and use.
Do you use it?
Well, this baby don't.
What would you do?
I don't. Well, first of all, it's usually made for a specific size button, which I may not be using either.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. what I do is I put my shirt on and I decide where my buttons will look best.
And you'd be wearing the undergarments that you were going to wear
Absolutely.
Under this shirt.
Absolutely.
Or under this dress.
Right.
Quick side note here. If any of you follow Gertie, Gretchen Hirsch, she makes a lot of vintage-inspired clothing. And she does a wonderful job. And she did this post the other day, which I was so glad about. She said, if you're going to be wearing this stuff, you got to wear the right undergarments.
Well, right.
You can't be wearing this structured, you know, thing or a strapless dress or something with nothing under there.
That's right.
You know, she said, to get this look.
Yeah, if you want a certain look. Now, if you want to look kind of droopy and free,
yeah.
then don't wear anything no. under it.
So if you're wearing a button-up shirt, you right. might not have to go put on your Merry Widow, you know.
Right.
But
that's true.
But if you're planning on it looking right. super structured, or that's the type of garment
right.
you're making,
or
keep
if
that in
you
mind.
Want it to look like it came from the 50s, you better have some pointy bras.
Yeah, and she
if you want it to look like that, your bras have to be pointy.
She does such a great job, and I was so glad that she emphasized
yeah.
that. Anyway, it's important. You can't just throw on clothes and expect
you
to look
can't,
a certain
right.
way.
When And hopefully the person who has authored the pattern is letting you know some of the
mm-hmm.
stuff. The other thing is when you look at a pattern envelope, we're going to talk about this
yeah.
later, okay?
Yeah.
And the picture and or drawing that's on it. We're going to talk about that later. So just don't think you're going to get that product.
So you put on your shirt.
Right.
And do you have like some safety pins nearby or straight pins?
I usually have straight pins when it comes to this because I'm taking them in and out a lot.
Uh-huh.
The first thing I do is I line up the placket with the non-placket side and the placket side. But the non-placket side where I'm going to sew on the buttons also is interfaced
yeah.
with a little strip of interfacing because I'm going to need that if I put the buttons there. And then what I do usually is the first thing I do is I pin it at the bust.
Right
and
across.
And I'm saying vertically or horizontally at the
uh-huh.
bust, you know.
Apex, across the apex.
Right,
that's right.
Like a dot between the two mountaintops,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's where it pulls.
Yep.
Okay. So then from there, I'm going to decide how many buttons I want and how far apart they might be. Now, generally, I usually make that the same. You know, if they're going to be 3 inches apart or 2 inches apart or whatever, I decide right then. And usually that those distances are equal. Occasionally, I may have to fudge on one. So that maybe, you know, the first button from the top, you have a top button and the next one, say, is the bust line button.
Uh-huh.
There might be a difference maybe right there than the rest of the buttons.
That happened to me when I
right.
was making a blouse. And actually, I made it out of knit, but then my placket
right.
and collar and stuff were out of a woven. And I actually chose not to put as many buttons because
right.
I knew I was never going to wear it closed.
That's right.
You know, so I put a button right at that bust line, and I think I put like one above.
Right.
And
but
then,
it didn't go to the top of the blouse.
And then
right.
I went to the bottom, and I kind of like saw where I like sat down.
And it
and
puckered.
I wanted to see
right.
where it was puckering. And my buttons, when the blouse was off of me, you were like, whoa, Those are not evenly spaced.
Right.
But when I put it on,
it looked fine. It
looked damn good.
Well, and the other thing you can do there is, you know, take the reference point of the bust and say, okay, I want this to be in the right place, and then space them, you know.
And decide.
No, well, space them, you know, exactly. They're 2 inches apart or however, whatever it works out to be. And then look at if you have any gaps or you think it's going to pull. You can put an invisible
nylon snap
there. And in fact, not all of them have to be invisible. So if we're on like a jacket, a heavy jacket, we'll use one of those big coat snaps, you know, that'll, and you'll see that this isn't cheating. If you go to Coco Chanel's, you know, showroom, she's got snaps between her buttons. That's why it lays like
so
that,
nicely.
Everybody.
Yeah.
The buttons are functional, but now you will also find that she has buttons on her jackets and the snaps are behind the buttons and there are no buttonholes.
Mm-hmm.
You will find that. And that is very couture.
That's very nice, too.
Yes, and it looks nice. It's very finished. Everything lays.
And you can never, you don't get a buttonhole that's ever going to stretch out of shape.
Never.
You know.
Never. And
so
that
you just
placket
show off that button.
Lays nice and flat.
Yeah.
And most of the time, you know, well, with Chanel, she has the boxy jacket. So sometimes her buttons are very important because they're the main detail.
Yeah, they're a focal point.
Right.
So now we aren't. We're going to put buttonholes on our book.
But we are, because we're talking about buttonholes, so we got to have buttonholes.
When you go over to your sewing machine, you've prepped your fabric in such a way, you've gotten your interfacing, your cotton organdy, your whatever, you know, in the garment. It's incorporated into
the
garment.
Well, you're not taking your garment over there. You're taking a sample that's exactly like where you're going to put your garment.
Good
so
call.
If there's a placket, you better have a faux placket sewn for yourself or an extra piece of placket, because that presser foot's going to be riding over the same lumps and bumps or ridges or, you know, whatever the topography is of that placket. So you want it sewn the same way. So when you're making that placket, make another piece just like it.
That's right. So you might have, like, you know, 2 layers of fabric, or you've got that seam there, or whatever. So
and you've got top stitching on both sides. You need that. You need to know that that's there.
If you want to be successful. So you're going to go over there. Now, here's the deal where we talk about stabilizer versus interfacing. You want to use a piece of stabilizer, tear away stabilizer.
Right. And this is that is a product that is manufactured that you can purchase.
That's right.
So you, when you sew through it, that later it pulls away easily from the stitches.
You put that underneath your fabric. It's between your feed dogs and your placket.
Right.
You put your presser foot on top of your fabric and you proceed to sew your buttonhole.
Right.
Okay.
I'm going to add a little bit
go
here.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So if I have a corduroy or a bumpy, silky woven
velvet
something,
or
velvet, anything with a nap, even maybe a burnout velvet, something, anything, okay?
A terry cloth button-up shirt, no.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever's bumpy and not nice and smooth. I want a wash-away stabilizer on top of my fabric.
So if you aren't familiar with machine embroidery, I feel like this is where people are like, what's that? You know, these tend to be in like the machine embroidery.
Right.
What do I want to say? Aisle. Okay. Or
accessories.
Or, yes.
Notions.
So keep that in mind. So it'll be called, you know, like wash away topping.
Right.
Okay.
Or wash away stabilizer.
Yes.
And it'll look kind of like cellophane usually.
And make sure it's the lightweight kind. Not the kind
you don't
like,
need a heavy one.
Not the kind you stitch out lace on. It's real lightweight. Should feel like saran wrap or something. Or you can mistake saran wrap. Stable. Anyway.
And that's been done.
Different podcast. What that tearaway does underneath, okay? I want to talk about this. It helps the fabric, that placket or whatever, ride along the feed dogs nicely while the buttonhole.
It's like you've just paved a new highway for those feed dogs to run on. So
while the
you get
being
a
stitched.
Smooth, functioning, you know, movement.
Have you ever stitched a buttonhole and it started to build up and not move
or
forward?
Stopped, or took a skip, whatever.
So all of that, it just paves, paves the road. Your buttonhole, you got to move forward, you got to stitch in place for a little bit, you got to move backward or vice versa, whatever your machine does. That's what the tearaway does. And then like Mom said earlier, it, since we're calling it a stabilizer, okay,
right.
It's something that afterwards can be torn away.
That's right.
Completely.
Right.
And it will, you know, it won't be there anymore.
That's right.
So we use the tearaway stabilizer. If you can't find tearaway stabilizer, what should you use instead?
I know that I can use almost any paper that's easily sewn through.
Yeah.
It's durable enough to stay back there. I can also use like a butcher's paper. I can use one thing that you can actually iron on, okay, is freezer paper because it has sort of a plastic side. Uh-huh. And if you put that against the fabric and a, you know, not too hot iron, that will make it stick on there for you.
And then you can tear it away.
Right, and then easily. It will tear away easily.
What you don't want to use and what we do not recommend ever sewing
ever,
through.
Ever, ever in your machine, near your machine, around your machine, for anything is
tissue paper. Oh, that's good.
Now, people, I use it all the time. I haven't had any trouble. I'm sure you haven't.
Right.
The day will come. Tissue paper is meant, it's tissue thin. It falls apart. It flakes. That's going down, can easily go down in to your hook system where your feed dogs are. The other thing it does is the feed dogs will tear it up, so then it becomes useless.
No, yeah, right.
It's pointless to even have
what
it
there. What did Sam say, though? She goes, unless you want to tweeze it out of your feed dogs. Yeah. Now,
it may have worked.
Happen to you all the time. Now, we do use, just so you know, tissue paper can have a place in the sewing room.
Right.
With cutting, right. But that's not what we're talking about.
Right. Nope.
We don't put tissue paper in our sewing machines.
Nope.
Okay.
As well as baby powder, which has been suggested before.
Definitely not
don't
baby powder.
Don't get me going.
No, yeah. So we don't use tissue paper in our sewing machines. Keep that in mind. Now, you've mentioned receipt tape before.
Yep.
And then Sandy in the group said the funniest thing. She goes, one time I couldn't find any paper or tearaway or whatever. She said, I had a receipt on the counter.
And she used it.
And she used it. And then, you know what she said? She said, I was on black and I didn't worry about the ink rubbing off.
Right.
But what I want to say is, most of the time it's not ink.
Well, but it's heat sensitive.
Yeah.
A lot of them now, too.
Uh-huh.
So I don't, you know. Be careful.
Do be careful.
Right. We like the receipt tape that's just like the old kind that, you know, your adding machine had to have a ribbon of ink in
now,
to use.
So if you are a machine embroiderer, take note because if you've gone and you've embroidered something on tearaway, you should save your tearaway scraps.
You save those little funny little pieces in a Ziploc bag and it says tearaway pieces.
And then, of course, how big are your buttonholes,
right?
Like
right.
this big.
Right.
And you can use tiny scraps of tearaway.
You know, you've got a centimeter, you know, or 2 centimeter buttonhole, you don't have to use a big piece and worry about it and waste it.
And you don't have to I'll do one buttonhole, tear it away.
Right.
Go to the next one. You know, you don't have to cut yourself a big strip on the sides of
your
placket.
Notebook paper works really well, like loose leaf notebook paper works. I've actually used paper out of a coloring book.
Oh yeah.
It's
newsprint.
It's very much like newsprint. And you do have to be careful about using newsprint that's been printed on.
Yeah.
Now the coloring book ink won't come off, but does anybody get the newspaper? Does anybody get that on their driveway anymore? Right. Anyway, so you know, you can use news print without the print,
right? So be careful about that. But if you want to, you could put the back side of the receipt or something if you were afraid, you know.
You know,
but a whole receipt, how many buttonholes could you get?
A whole lot. Another thing I want to talk about. Just because I happen to see it in our studio right now, and I had someone come and ask me how to do this.
Yeah.
How do I make a buttonhole in dot sequin? Does everybody know what the dot sequin is? We've talked about it before. But it's the knit, and it has plastic sequins on it, right?
They're glued on. Yeah.
And people say, how do I make a buttonhole in that? You don't. That's really the one where you sew the buttons on and put a snap behind
on the
it.
Back. Okay.
There's no way you're going to get a good buttonhole out of that. As well as I'm sure there's other fabric that you can't be successful on.
Now, let's talk about thread a little bit.
Yeah.
That's one thing we haven't really spoken about. I will say, I don't think we need to go over how to open the buttonholes on this podcast. If you have a question about
how... You better be using a buttonhole cutting tool.
You don't use a seam ripper. Use a buttonhole cutter set, and we have those for sale on our website.
It's the only way to do it, guys. And if you've ever if you've never used one, the experience of using one is it's such perfection.
And there's a video. We did a video
on
it.
We do have a video, yeah. So look
so
that
it's,
up.
It's on there. So if you go to sewhere.com and search for it, you'll find it.
Right.
Okay, so thread. What kind of thread do you use on your buttonholes, Mom?
The only kind of thread I use now is basically decorative thread, whether that be a fine embroidery thread or a top stitch thread. I do not use construction thread because it's not so pretty.
Yeah.
So if I want a matte finish, I would be using what is called, they call it now cotton embroidery thread.
Uh-huh.
We used to call it cotton darning thread, and that comes on a spool. And what I use in the bobbin is definitely something of the same weight or lesser weight.
Uh-huh.
Because I want those stitches pulled to the bottom. I don't want any bobbin thread coming up like in machine embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
I want that satin stitch pulled to the bottom.
Right. So I've done a buttonhole with construction thread lately. I can't remember why, but I did
because
it.
Because I wasn't there, I
well,
guess.
Well, no, I don't know if I was stitching a sample or something, and I was just doing it. I can't remember why, but it just wasn't
it's not as
pretty.
Well, those threads do not lay as nice and as flat. They
and
just don't.
When you do use the embroidery thread, it just lays nicer, lays flatter.
The other thing with embroidery thread, of course, is usually you can match or find the color you want. Or you can do a variegated thread buttonhole. You can make those buttonholes fun. You know, and buttonholes can be a decorative element.
Oh, absolutely. So on the ginger jeans, when I was teaching people to do that, I had them buy the heavy, heavy top stitch thread for top stitching. But then when we went to
Which was the cordonnet,
And we sell that. And is it a 30 weight. It's not 12 weight.
12 weight is really heavy.
Really thick. When we used that, it was great. But then when we went to do their buttonholes and their bar tacks, we switched to embroidery thread, machine embroidery thread that was lighter weight because the bar tacks are a satin stitch, much like a buttonhole, and buttonholes have bar tacks on them.
Right.
You know, and so if you tried to do that really tight stitch with top stitch thread, it just wouldn't go. It wouldn't be good. It would look terrible. It wouldn't lay nice. So that's like on the fly. You do some bar tacking and then the buttonhole. And the buttonholes are great.
And if you look on your ready-to-wear, they use two different threads.
Yeah, they do. And so when you are getting that dense buildup of stitching, you can't use as heavy of a thread.
No.
Using a decorative thread will give you a nicer finish. If you use a construction thread, I mean, I don't know what you're doing this on, but it'll work. It'll just look as nice.
And for years I used construction thread. I didn't know. And what happened to me was I was making something and I had some machine embroidery thread because I didn't have an embroidery machine, but I had a machine that did decorative stitches.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my construction thread was not, of course, totally matchy, which I don't think it has to be, whatever I was constructing. And I was like, oh, no. And I was like, wait a minute. I think I used cotton embroidery thread at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, why don't I use this? And once I did that, I was like, never again. I mean, I looked at my other buttonholes and they were clunky, funky looking compared to my decorative thread buttonholes.
Yeah, absolutely.
They just were. Yeah.
Well, I think that's about all we have to say on buttonholes.
Well, and there's a lot more about buttonholes. We haven't talked about the types. We've just talked about technique.
Only 45 minutes worth of buttonhole.
Hope you everybody got their walk-in or whatever they were supposed to do.
We appreciate you listening to the podcast. And if you want to keep up with us, we're still ZD Sewing Studio on Instagram, and you can get a hold of me via email Mallory@sewhere.com, and go sign up for that newsletter. I think I've been doing a really good job at sewhere.com/lovenote. So thanks for listening.
So long and so happy.
Thanks for listening to Sewing Out Loud. For even more expert sewing advice, visit sewhere.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.